Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about our organization Toward the Light and the support and services that we provide, please visit our website, towardthelight.org, and our media website, which pertains to this radio broadcast, towardthelight.info. Well, after a little bit of technical difficulty, we're well intact here, and we finally got our guest, who is the author of a wonderful book entitled Hidden Laws, The Ultimate Tools for Divine Co-Creation. Let us welcome to Toward the Light, Ms. Ula Jacobs. Hello, Ula.
Hello, Juliet.
How are you?
Very well, thanks. I'm coming to you from beautiful British Columbia.
Yes, in fact, I used to live in Victoria, B.C., and actually a lot of areas there, Nanaimo, and also Honeymoon Bay. And
yeah.
I'm sure it is still as beautiful as it was when I was there a few years ago.
It certainly is, yeah. Greetings from here to you.
Well, thank you so much, and it's really lovely to have you on Toward the Light, and I've enjoyed reading your book very, very much. And what I would like to do, Ula, is start by asking you to share with our listeners the experiences that you had that actually catapulted you into the writing of Hidden Laws. What were the special events that took place for you?
Oh, yes. First of all, I had an illness. I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, and it ended up going 9 years until I finally got to the end of that. And it basically started me searching for alternative ways to get well and also into alternative healing practices. And that opened up a whole new world for me, into the world of metaphysics and the esoteric. And it just sort of came from there. And then I ended up going to a channeling up in Qualicum Bay, which you probably know where that is. With a group called Cry On, presented by Lee Carroll. And during that channeling, I had a major opening, 450 people in one room toning, and I suddenly saw myself in another time, another place, wearing a long dark robe and hearing the same sounds. And it was like a connection with a previous life where the similar circumstances were at hand that I was hearing this kind of musical resonance. And I went, whoa, what was that? And I've always been interested in reincarnation and all of that kind of stuff, but I never, ever had an insight to the fact that it actually really existed. And after that incident, I began questioning more about, you know, whether it was that and had I really been in another life. And in quick succession, in the dream state, probably about 3 or 4 days apart, I was shown another couple of lives that I had had. And the difference between those showings of the lives and normal dreams is the fact that I was actually in the body that was being presented at the time. And instead of just looking in on a scene, I was part of it, and I smelled the country and felt the earth beneath my feet and the body, in this case, running at great speed for a long time, and it just felt extremely real. So I had entered a realm, and my guides basically provided the information I was looking for, and from that time on, even till now, when I ask for something to be clarified or I question something, there's always a way that they show me the answers.
Now, had all of this been, I'm hearing a couple of things. You were telling me that actually you had an ongoing interest or at least curiosity about reincarnation, but before your illness, had all of this been something that really was something that you weren't aware of or really pursuing? Was it something that was really alien to you prior to your experience with the illness, or are these things that had piqued your interest before the illness?
There was one incident before the illness, and it was when I was in my 8th month of pregnancy, and I woke one morning, or sort of awoke one morning, and I felt the presence of my grandmother on my mother's side, whom I was very, very close with as a child, and I felt her holding my hand. And I said, Oma, which is how I knew her, and felt her very, very clearly that she was in the room with us. And then as I'm becoming more and more awake into normal conscious state, I found that my left arm was stretched out over the bed, and it was actually hanging out towards whoever was there holding my hand, which was my Oma. And it felt very, very real and very clear, and I thought, oh, you know, what happened there? And never gave it a whole lot more thought other than to try and, you know, like I really would have liked to have gone back to that space because it just felt so special and so loving and so supportive. And then, you know, life gets busy. You have a small child and you work, and we built homes, and, you know, we were busy the whole time. And it wasn't until really the illness that I started to delve into all these extra special modalities. So that one instance must have happened to give me sort of an insight of what was to come down the line, because I very clearly remembered it.
When did that take place? When did that take place with you, Oma?
That was in the 70s, because I was pregnant with my daughter, who was born in 76, and it was just about a month before she was born. So I always wondered if my grandmother came in as that soul, or if she was there to support the soul of my daughter coming in. And since that time, I have known that they're both two different energies. So I just suspect that my grandmother was there to just sort of support me as the soul was coming in.
And indeed, you can be assured that that was the case, because I share with people all the time the fact that people, and you mentioned this in your book too, which is absolutely lovely, that people on the other side do reach out to us in very tangible ways, as well as so-called intangible. And I always encourage people never, disqualify this or ignore it, because it is absolutely real that these things are taking place.
Yeah.
Because we truly are interdimensional beings, so this is very powerful. I also was born again, one of my born agains in 1976 from my big NDE. Of course, it happened in 75 and 76, and I lost my vital signs on my birthday, which is 2nd February, so I can tell everyone I'm 32 and I'm not lying. Well, I guess I'm 33 now. No, 32, I'm 32. So it's really quite tremendous when these things happen, and I could feel that very loving presence of your Oma, even as I was reading about this in your book. I felt that loving presence. I was right there with you, and I thought, oh, yes, this is wonderful. So,
that's awesome.
Yes, it's very important to honor that and to acknowledge it. So then after that experience, it was really your becoming ill. And interestingly, you know, how illnesses can really be very special gifts. They're catalysts to put us into a situation where we really seek something that is a tremendous treasure to us. So go ahead and share with us more about this. I know that you went to that get-together, and that's K-R-Y-O-N. Is that
that's correct?
Is that how it's spelled? Yes.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit about that? I'm trying to remember, too, although it's been a while since I was actually exposed to that.
Yes, Lee Carroll is the man that channels, and it's a group called Cryon, more than one entity, as I understand it.
Okay, that's what I remember, too, composite entity, as we call it.
Yes, that's right, yes. And it was really neat. I had never been exposed to anything like that before. But, of course, since I have, because that was just the opening of the door, and I stepped through it and never looked back. It's just been a steady learning and experiencing and loving every moment of it since. But I actually should share something that my dad told me that happened to him as a small boy as well, because since we are interested in the near-death experiences, or actually I should phrase that first of all. Let's use the proper phraseology, because death meaning only the death of the body.
Exactly.
As we all know, the energy spark within us doesn't die. But
exactly.
What my dad shared with me, when I guess I was in my early 20s, and he shared it reluctantly because in those days, as you may remember, nobody talked about this stuff, and when they did, they were afraid of being labeled odd or weird or, you know, but nowadays it's mainstream and everybody understands, and quantum physics and quantum mechanics have supported that there is such an energy as the unified field and all of that, what goes along with it. But at the time that this happened, my dad was reluctant, but he did share with me what happened when he was a small boy. And he was living on a farm at that time. And on that farm was an animal sewage containment ditch, which was where all the effluent from the animals went and were stored there for a while and then were later fertilized for the fields, fertilizer spread onto the fields. So mm-hmm. He was near that ditch, and they were it was him and his brother, his older brother, and a friend of his older brother, and they were playing on the field. And they were walking beside this ditch, and somehow my father tripped, and he fell right into this sewage ditch, and it was like sludge and, you know, just lovely stuff. And he struggled quite a bit and then felt himself going under. And as he went under, he pulled out of his body, and suddenly he's above his brother and the friends that are kneeling beside this ditch trying to get him out. But they can't see him because it's obviously not clear water or anything. So he's above them looking down at them, and he hears his brother say, "Grab my hand." So his brother sticks his hand into the sludge, and he hears him say, "Grab my hand." So he came up and grabbed hold of this hand once he found it, and was pulled out of this sludge. And it was only because of him being out of body that he was able to hear his brother say that. So if that hadn't happened, that would have been the end of my dad. So
that was a really
neat story. And he was only about, I can't remember exactly, but I think he was somewhere around 9 or 10 years old. And it was a profound experience for him because it came upon my asking him one time whether he believed in reincarnation or not. And he said, "Well, I don't know if it's reincarnation or not," but then he said, "This is what happened to me." And I thought, wow, that's really cool that he had that insight as a young
child.
Oh,
I think that's wonderful because I was going to ask you, you know, what prompted him or enabled him to share that profound experience with you. And, you know, it's so interesting that so many people, when they do go out of body, they are able to iterate everything verbatim that has been said, and they've been able to share what was going on you know, whilst their body was incapacitated or died or what have you. And I'm really hoping now that the medical community will start to get a hold of this, because I've been in the operating theater more times than I care to mention, thank you very much. And when doctors are performing the surgical procedures, I mean, I would even start to hear some of these strange dialogues before I would go under, and they'd start cracking these jokes, some of them obscene. In other words, there's a real lack of reverence, a lack of respect, a lack of dignity, and I thought, no, no, no. You don't do that kind of thing, because even though the body may be asleep and seemingly unconscious, that individual is not unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had enough documentation at this point to validate the fact that the people really, really are conscious. And so I'm hoping now that, that people in the medical establishment are going to start cleaning up their act, quite literally. And and regarding the person whom they're treating with reverence and respect, and, you know, they need to be playing nice ambient music and saying loving, having loving dialogues with one another and towards the patient with whom they're working on. So this is just another example, point and proof here about the fact that people are conscious even when their bodies are not.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful. I'm so pleased that, that you're for the shared that experience with you. And so then when you were at this seminar, what have you, all of these things were triggered, it seems, specifically about past lives, and you had these very lucid experiences where you were remembering yourself in other lifetimes. What happened from there? And you were dealing with the illness also at this time, is that correct?
Yes, yes, I was. Actually, I, no, let me think about that for a minute. No, the illness had passed by then. And the illness passed when I got a shift in focus. First of all, my husband saw me going downhill more and more and more. By year nine, he said, hey, you know, we have to do something here. Why don't we try meditation? So off we went for a week, every day, like every evening for a week, we went to our local TM seminar practice. And
Transcendental meditation,
yes,
correct?
Correct,
okay.
Yes. The Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi. And what happened there was that, first of all, provided me, the meditation practice provided me with more energy. And because at that time I was pretty drained. And as that happened, I started to become more vocal. And I said, somebody has to be able to help this. And when I said that, a whole set of circumstances came together, one after another. And once we went with one and then followed them along, it got me to an iridologist in Vancouver, BC. And she looked in my eyes and she said, I said, I told her what had been happening for all these years, and she said, you don't have colitis. And then she went out and got another brighter light to look through, and she said, let me just make sure, and took another look and said, no, you, I do not see any evidence of colitis in your iris. And if anybody is in, knows about iridology, it's the art of being able to see things that are happening in the major organs in the body by looking at the iris. And I said to her, okay, if it's not colitis, what the heck is it that's giving me so much trouble and has been for the last 9.5 years at that point? And she said, well, what I'm picking up here is a huge overrun of Candida albicans, and it's mostly in the large intestine. And that's where all my trouble was. So I said, okay, if that's the case, what do I do next? Like, how can we get this resolved once and for all? Because at that time, I was so fed up, I'd had it, you know, and something needed to change. So she put me on to a naturopath living in North Vancouver who had had success with this type of thing, and he did kinesiology testing and various other things like that. And we went to him, and he concurred with the diagnosis that, yes, there was a major overrun in the large intestine, but it had also gone systemic. And, I mean, this stuff was coming out over my eyelids as sort of little blisters. And I think it was trying to escape any way it could, like the body was trying to get rid of it. And he put me on something at that time called mycocidin, which was based on coconut oil. And at that point, it took 3 weeks to eradicate it, and I changed my way of eating at the same time. And that was brought about by reading his book. First of all, I should actually go back a little bit. I read his book first, Dr. John Mattson is his name, and found a case study of exactly the same symptoms that I was having in there, and it said at the bottom of it, he had cured this patient of her colitis symptoms within 3 weeks, and I said to my husband, if he can do it for her, he can do it for me. So my mindset was already there, okay, this guy's going to heal me. And then the focus became towards wellness. Prior to that, I had been managing an illness all along, and my focus was on managing an illness. And then the meditation and then getting on to this person in Vancouver, the iridologist, and then the naturopath got me into the focus of thinking about health and healing. And that was actually the turnaround in the body for me. And then when later on, when I started to investigate hidden laws, the actual laws of the universe, I realized that I had manifested that. I had created that change in my body, that now I was focusing on getting well, and the body was working with me in order to bring that about. So that was awesome, too.
Yes, indeed. And so what was the remedy, as it were, that the doctor was able to offer to you? Was it an herbal?
Mycocidin, yeah. They use many other things now, including grapeseed oil and I think tea tree oil or oil of oregano. There's many other things that are people using nowadays, but at that time, the most effective thing was mycocidin, and it cleared me up. It really did. And then, like I say, the lifestyle change, I got rid of all white flour, all white sugar. There weren't too many additives in our meals already, but those that were also went and became much more a purist in the way I ate, like back to the land. Eventually, with our experimenting of meals, my husband and I both found that we were liking the vegetarian meals more than we were with the meat-eating meals. So eventually, we just cut out all the meat as well and became vegetarian, and since that time have never looked back. We do yoga in the mornings to keep us limber, and we're active and healthy. We've both been retired for 5 years now, almost, and are just wonderful. Like, we're really healthy and feel great, so it's working.
Oh, I'm really one to support and encourage vegetarianism as well, because I've been a vegetarian since the 60s, and actually, I never really fancied meat, so it was very easy when I was told, you need to stop eating meat because your body can't handle it. I said, oh, no problem, thank you. You know, so when people ask me, why are you vegetarian, I can say, well, for medical as well as other reasons, and I can have an appropriate answer for whoever asks me, and they're all true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's we really need to listen intuitively to what our bodies are telling us, because every body is different and responds to different things and has got a different chemical makeup. So we've just got to really tune in and pay attention to that. And it seems like the work that you're doing and have done with all of that is really worked magnificently for you. And I'm sure that it's also helped you have a lot more mental clarity. Am I right about that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, I think the way we're eating now is, I guess it's a cleansing diet on a daily level. Make no mistake, as you know, having been a vegetarian for so many years, I don't feel deprived in any way, because I just make really nice food without the meat. You know, we still have lasagnas and pizzas and all, you know, the really neat salads with all neat things in it and homemade dressings and everything. So we don't, either of us, feel deprived in any way, but the mental clarity is definitely better than it was we've been, for 26 years, we've been vegetarian. So prior to that, I was younger, but I was not in as good shape as I am now.
Isn't that something? Well, in a lot of ways, I feel like I'm in better shape than I was when I was younger, even though I'm retirement age, but I can't retire. I have to work for a living. But I'm very excited about all of the work that we're doing, and it's making a tremendous impact on the world, and I think we're setting a very good example. So now what I would like to do, Ulla, is start talking about some of the things that, well, first of all, tell me what prompted you to write this wonderful book, and then maybe we can go into talking about some of the things that you discuss in the book, again, Hidden Laws. And we should share with our listeners, the website is hiddenlaws.com if you'd like to visit that site and refer to the book as we're talking about it, hiddenlaws.com. We're speaking with Ulla Jacobs. Okay, Ulla, go ahead and tell us a bit about the book.
Well, first of all, I started making notes about various subjects that I was coming across that were of interest to me, and I kept making notes of things that were pertinent, and especially about the illness and what I went through and everything. And then I had this huge file of notes, and I thought, well, one day down the line, I'm probably going to do a book because this is what it's leading to. And it was all about different healing modalities and all of what I went through and everything. And then one day, my daughter was home from, I think she was living in London at that time, and she was home, and a friend of hers that she went to school with named Kara came over, and as usual, when we get to talking, we start talking about all these subjects and, you know, what's of interest to us. And we started talking about all this stuff, and she said, well, how come there isn't a book about this?
Your daughter said that?
My daughter's friend said that.
Oh, your daughter's friend.
And I thought, yeah, there is. There are probably about 10 books about this, but it's not all in one. So and at that moment, there was sort of like a click in my mind that said, okay, here you go. You know, this is what you needed. Because when she said that, I thought, okay, I'm going to write a book for people like her that are going to say, okay, how come there isn't a book about this? And then I actually had all these notes, and I started looking at them, and I thought, well, here are all these disjointed things, and there's no cohesion to any of it. What am I going to do with this? So I asked that again, what am I going to do with this? And the very next night, I'm up at 3 in the morning, finding myself standing on the other side of the veil, and beside me is a guide. And he's standing there, and I came into the conscious awareness of this dream when he's saying to me, don't you get it yet, as I'm looking at a couple of other guides standing on a platform like a stage in front of me. And he said, don't you get it yet? And I said, get what? I'm not sure what I'm supposed to get here. And then the very next instance, I saw the title of the book, which was Hidden Laws. And I thought, okay, so I made the notes while I was consciously awake of the dream, and then the next day I looked at all my notes that I had, and I thought, okay, this is where they want me to go. They want me to go to the universal laws, because when I read over everything I had, some of it was already heading that way. So I knew where this book needed to go. And they basically provided the title. I actually had another title in mind. I was going to call it Dancing with the Universe. And like I say, it just never came together until they showed me the title, and then I just knew where to take it, and I just ran with it.
Well, it's interesting how you got the cosmic cue, as it were, from your daughter's friend.
Yeah.
And then you had that lucid, what appears like an out-of-body experience, where you connected with your guides, and then they took you a step further to... enabled you to bring cohesion about with these different subjects and or topics. And I can see in the book how indeed they are very much related. And, you know, something's telling me also that what happened with your father was something, you know, either consciously or not, that helped to contribute to all of this coming about, if you follow what I'm saying.
Yes, my questioning. Yes, because that was the first questioning, was when his story came along. Is this really real? Does this happen? You know, where do we go from here? And that sort of opened another little, actually the first little door And then with my grandmother appearing, that was the second little door. And then, of course, with the cryon, the door just blew wide open. So it was really something. So, it's really interesting how we're guided when we ask for the guidance. And that's actually one of the universal laws, is the law of free will, which allows us, first of all, to make decisions about anything. We're in charge. But it also needs to be used to get our guides working for us, because without that impetus of saying to them, please help me out here, or can you provide this or that for me, they can't act, because they cannot go against the universal law. And that's one of the laws of nature, is that, you know, you have to have permission before you step in.
So let's talk about that a little bit more, because I know many people constantly are asking questions about the issue of free will. What would you say about this? How, you know, when you're dealing with a certain situation, and you know, there's some interesting things that happen here, because we don't want to confuse free will with ego versus the being true to soul. In other words, sometimes the ego will say, I want to do this, or I want to go somewhere, and yet that is not allowed to happen for whatever reason, because the soul, or when one is being true to soul, the soul intervenes and says, no, it's not the right time or the right situation or what have you. So how would you like to comment on this, and how free will enters in for you according to your understanding? Are you there, Ula? All right, we got cut off here. I apologize for that. We were talking about free will, and I don't know when I lost you or when you lost me, Ula, but I was asking you about your understanding of free will and how it works, especially when you're dealing with the ego versus being true to soul, or the will that comes from soul, if you follow what I'm saying. So if you don't mind commenting about that, what your understanding of all that is and how it works.
Yes, every day that we have, the number of thoughts that we have in a day that pass through our mind, every once in a while there are certain ones that we choose to act upon and take them further than just the thought stage. And it's actually the free will aspect of that that's causing us to bring that forward. You know, so if you say, I think I will, and then have maybe five things you want to do, the one that you actually do is the free will impetus to bring it forward into an acting stage from a thought stage. And then every single time that we take a thought like that and bring it forward to any kind of an action, there are actually three universal laws that are engaged and working simultaneously in conjunction to bring about the desired effect. And that is, first of all, the law of free will, which provides the choice to act. Secondly, the law of creation, which provides the spark to ignite the energy to move it forward from a thought to an action. And then the law of attraction, which will bring it on by seeking the same resonance as emitted, like if it's something that we're looking for to bring to us.
Now, what if somebody wants something, or let's say someone wants to go somewhere, and they put a lot of focus and thought and energy into it, and yet for whatever reason it just doesn't happen, it's not allowed to happen. How would you interpret that?
Probably a misalignment of the energy with the desire. Like if we desire, okay, you brought up a trip. Is that what you mean? Like a vacation or something?
Sure, like going on a holiday or what have you.
Okay, what would happen there is you decide where you want to go, and then take any step towards that goal. Like it's not enough just to sit here and say to myself, okay, I want to go to Bermuda, without acting further to bring that about. So something needs to happen, which is the law of creation, providing the spark for the forward motion. So you move the energy forward from the thought stage to something tangible that you do, research, hotels, cars, airfares, whatever. And then the next step would be to align with the energy of that thought of what it would be, like how would it feel to be in Bermuda on vacation? And then you're already linking up to that energy resonance of being there and bringing that being there into the nowness. So it's just an interlining of vibrance, frequency, vibration.
Right, yes, I certainly understand that. Because we talk about frequencies all the time and the different vibrational frequencies that occur.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's an interesting question, because this is something that I've dealt with, and I have indeed wanted to go somewhere and indeed put a lot of thought and energy into it, but it just didn't happen. It didn't happen at all. And so what I realized, what I concluded, was that it wasn't time, it wasn't meant to be yet.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a difference, and I really feel that it's important to make the distinction between what the ego may want, and the ego's got plenty of free will, we know this, but then there's also what's called being true to soul, or the will of the soul. And when we are operating from soul, we're operating from a greater place of wisdom that the ego is not really aware of. So, you know, maybe that holiday will ultimately happen, but not when and how we initially thought or wanted, or maybe it's another year or two away before something like that happens. So do you follow what I'm saying there? Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, actually, that's part of the stages of manifestation as well, is to walk away from the outcome. Okay, you've said this is what I'd like to do, taking a step towards doing it, feeling how it would feel to be there or get it or whatever, you know, is it a job or whatever it is, feel the resonance of how that would be for you to have it, and then walk away from the outcome, because it doesn't always work the way you think it's going to work. Like if you decide, okay, it's going to happen this, and this, the universe has other ideas sometimes, and it'll happen the way it's better to be happening than you think it might be. So, yeah, I've had that happen many times with me, where I've sort of projected something on how it was going to go, and it never went that way.
Yes, and now that's a really very important point, because I'm a clairvoyant medium, and you know, I often share with people, all right, I see this coming about. And in fact, I did it the other night when I was talking to a client, and she was saying, oh, I don't know how that could be. We don't have money, or we don't have this. And I remember talking to one client a number of years ago, and she said, well, that won't be possible unless I win the lottery. Oh, that's a famous one, winning the lottery, you know. And I said, wait a minute, you know, you are putting limitations on how things can manifest for you, and there's the big word is how. How is this going to happen? And I say, never mind how, just trust that it will be so, and be open and allow yourself to flow. Because, you know, as you've been talking about, there is a lot about the how, and I think that's really irrelevant. Just being open. And when I have made these predictions to people, even though from the current vantage point it didn't seem or even feel likely, I got reports back, guess what? It happened. It came to pass. And it's really exciting. So I think that that's a very important point that we need to make, is that when we do have a dream or a goal about something, or even it's somebody like a clairvoyant or medium is seeing something very positive coming about that may appear almost impossible, that it's important for one to remain open and say, okay, I trust that it will be, and then to go into the flow with it. Now, I wanted to ask you, let's get into some of the other laws that you're talking about in your book, because we've been talking about the law of free will, and obviously some of these are not in the same order that you've got them in your book, but I think it doesn't really matter.
No.
Let's talk about your experience and understanding of cause and effect.
Yes, cause and effect. I actually have nicknames for all the laws, and the cause and effect law I call the boomerang law, because whatever we set in motion in our deeds that we do, it sets up an, I guess again, it's on all on frequency, right? So it sets up an energy that we're putting out to the universe, and that energy eventually finds its way back because we are the provider of that original energy. So it's an energy flow that goes out from us and, like a boomerang, returns back to its owner. So with awareness of that, we can be darn sure that we don't put out too many things that we don't want back again. So it allows us to be proactive with what we're receiving.
Would you like to give us an example, a couple of examples of that?
Yes, if you're, say, being not very nice to people all the time, you know, and channeling aggression towards someone, say it's a co-worker or someone in the family fold, whatever, if you're doing this on a basis of not being nice to people, that energy goes out to that person and it goes out to the universe and eventually comes back to you, so you're going to have to take a hit on that. And sometimes in the past it's been in concurrent lifetimes, like it doesn't necessarily come around in the same life again, but it's sort of the thing where we're being the victim and the victimizer, you know, that type of thing in each role playing that we come in to do in these lives. Cause and effect is a large part of that, because we'll choose to, if we, say, murdered somebody in a life, we'll choose to be the recipient of that same energy coming towards us, and that's where the cause and effect comes in. But now, with the quickening and the Schumann resonance having gone up so high, changing the consciousness of the world and everyone in it, and all the awakening going on, I suspect that these reciprocal actions are coming around in the same lifetime now.
Things because definitely are being sped up, aren't they?
Yes, they are, very much so, yeah. And the Schumann resonance has gone up to over 11, and I think it may be even close to 12 now, and it was sitting steady at 7 point something for many, 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 many years. And I think it's part of what we call the quickening, where life seems to be speeding up a lot more because our awareness is quicker and the heartbeat of the earth is faster. So that's all part of it. So I think nowadays the cause and effect is you know, you can take I've seen it happen in cases where it comes around really fast. Whereas, like years ago, people used to say, well, you know, it might take a few lifetimes. But no, it doesn't seem to be taking that anymore. So
sometimes it would just be a few moments.
Yes, that's right. Yes, very much so, yeah. And then the law of one vibration is actually turned out to be one of my favorites. All the laws are important and they all work together. But this is the one power, the light that's within all of us. It binds us all to each other and together with everything else in the universe. And it's actually the stream that contains all knowledge of what's gone before and will yet to be coming. And it's really the real information superhighway when you look at it like that. You know, this is where everything happens. And it's the resonance upon which all universal law is really based, working with the resonance, the frequency, that is that one flow. And it's working whether we're aware of it or not. So if we have that awareness and that understanding of how these things work, then we can be more proactive with what comes our way, and we can become better informed to take our self-empowerment, to take that power on for us. And there's actually a very old parable that I can speak to on that one, and that is The Wizard of Oz. Dorothy and her pals went on a journey, a quest to find the wizard that was going to actually bestow power to each one of them. And they discovered, of course, that the wizard was a phony. He was a charlatan. So, but the insight gained was that the power was already within each of them. They didn't need the wizard at all. And this is the one power, the light of all knowledge that resides within each of us. So we have the power to be and to manifest anything and everything. It's just a matter of aligning with the spirit energy that can bring that about.
And that's such a very important message, again, to turn within instead of looking outside of ourselves for the answers. It really does lie within, because we've all got that direct link to Source.
Yeah.
And I would like to ask you how you came to this understanding about the Law of One. What are some of the things that occurred in your life that led you to this knowledge, to this wisdom of the Law of One?
Well, it's funny because I started, that was the first law I wrote about. And at the time, I said in one of my other interviews, it seemed like the easiest to begin with. And I thought, okay, this one's going to be easily done, quickly over, and then I can go on to more important stuff. And boy, was I wrong. I looked at it and I thought, okay, the one power flows throughout all of us. Big deal. You know, that was the end of my knowledge, and I thought, well, okay, that's not going to fill a chapter for sure, and that's not giving anybody any real information that they don't already have. So I started to do some research on who else was working with this one power, and I found, of course, people like Masaru Emoto, who did the messages on water.
That's
and
so
of course
stunning.
That's it's awesome, isn't it? Yeah, that's
yes.
driven by the one power. And then there was a gentleman called Cleve Baxter who was working with plants and how they reacted to actually his thoughts.
Yes, yes.
And found that plants were conscious as well.
Oh, very
and then,
much so.
Yeah, very much so. Everything, you know, when you understand the one power, you realize that it flows through every single thing, just in different densities. And then there was Rupert Sheldrake, who did the same type of experiment with dogs who seemed to know with different, varying the things that were happening, that their owners were coming home. Like the moment that the owner had the thought, okay, I'm going home now, the dog would run to the window. And it wasn't until that thought, like they coincided the times and they changed them and, you know, had things done differently and like so that it wouldn't obviously be just habit. And they found that these dogs were responding to, like, the owner would tap in the time that they had the thought, and then the person that was watching the dog would correlate the time that the dog went to the window to see if the owner was coming home, and they, in each case, they coincided.
And
so here again.
That's a very important point about telepathy.
Yes, it is.
And
yes, and also the one power with all of us, connecting all of us. Yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And that's something I can never stress enough, because, again, you know, so many people, well, when we're children, we are still in a place of remembrance and knowing and full of wisdom and still very much multidimensional and what have you. But then, unfortunately, more with some than others are conditioned out of it, which is really, really sad state of affairs. And so now with all of this, we're being shown the power of thought and the power of mind-to-mind, heart-to-heart, soul-to-soul communication, which bypasses the telephone, as we just got cut off a little while ago. And, you know, all of this, and a really interesting thing with this, too, is that my daughter was in Manhattan, New York City, during 9/11. And
yeah.
I was in Nashville, Tennessee, and not having a television. Thank goodness I didn't have a television. I don't believe in the thing. All I had to go on was the telepathy between us. And that was the one thing that kept me sane. And you can imagine being a mum yourself,
mm-hmm.
how it would feel if you suddenly knew that your daughter was in a war zone, as it were, and you had no idea how she was or if she was even alive. But thanks
yeah.
to the telepathic communion, I knew that she was all right, and it kept me fine. And what's interesting, too, is that she told me that what she was projecting was exactly verbatim what I was hearing, because
wow.
I told her what I heard, and she said that's exactly what she was projecting to me telepathically. So you know, this is so true, and animals by their very nature are telepathic, so I'm certain that if you know, someone is saying to one's dog or one's pig or what have you, one's bird, I'm coming home now, that animal is going to respond. And in fact, I used to have a pot belly pig for a while, Angus Harry Hog, and it was amazing how haunted I was by him, and it didn't matter where I was. I was able to tap into his thoughts, what he was feeling, what he was going through. Oh, it's quite amazing. And I had very lucid dreams with him as well. So this is a wonderful point. I'm so pleased that you brought it up, and that is in your book, too. I remember reading about that and thinking, oh, this is great.
Yeah. It,
yeah.
Very profound tests these people did and came to interesting conclusions, too. It's you know, their own books are just marvelous to read.
And I really love the work of Emoto, too. In fact, every time I look at this photograph, I start crying because just, I mean, the pristine beauty when you are seeing the water affected by thoughts of love versus the negative thoughts.
Love, but love in different languages, which means that the actual word we're giving it is not as important as the resonance of the idea behind the word.
Well, exactly,
you know, like
that's the same principle with telepathy as well, because telepathy isn't really words, even though our thoughts may be words. It's the intent and the communion beyond the words that is taking place. And, of course, this is what we experience on the other side during near-death states and out-of-body states.
Mm-hmm.
We're in this telepathic communion. And in fact, I think that's also what happened with your father and his brothers. You know, it was really telepathic, even though they were calling out to him.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to hear their thoughts.
Yeah.
And so, again, I can't stress enough the importance of people really listening to and honoring the telepathic communion that takes place. And this is what, you know, again, the law of one we've really come to know through our near-death states, and of course you don't have to have a near-death experience or what I call an eternal life experience to understand this law of one. I'm sure that you probably went through it when you were in these altered states yourself, am I right, where you just feel this complete unconditional love surrounding you?
Yes.
And if you'd like to share with us some details about some of this, feel free to do so.
Actually, I'd like to make that point of the one power a little bit more clear to people if they understand it and they realize just what's at work here, that we're all the same, we're all connected. It should be able to get people to the point where wars would no longer be because we are fighting against each other.
Yes.
And we're also fighting against ourselves.
Against ourselves, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's a connection. We all have a connection. And the other part of that is that we can be, like often I hear people say, oh, well, what can one person do? One person can't do anything. Well, yes, they can, because we all share in that consciousness. That consciousness of the one power is all of us and everything we think and do on a daily basis. So if we can all hold peace in our hearts, that's going to be in that consciousness. If we can all hold positive thoughts as opposed to negative thoughts, that's all going to be in that consciousness. So we are, on a daily basis, able to make a difference by what resonance we project towards that light, because we are that light.
Well, I think that's something that is so powerful with people who do have these spiritually transformative experiences, NDEs and OBEs, because we actually are able to experience firsthand on a conscious level this truth of all of us being one, all of us being a part of that light source. And there's absolutely no sense of separation whatsoever. And, you know, unfortunately, it starts to sound like a cliche when people are talking about it, but then there are those who actually can grok it because they've been there. They know what that experience is. So they become very conscious about their thoughts and actions as a result of having been through this, because when you're being nasty to so-and-so, you're being nasty to yourself, because so-and-so is a part of yourself.
Yeah.
And even those who have been not very nice to me, I still regard them with compassion and not just, you know, again, it's not just a hypothetical word, but I actually honestly feel that, and I pray for them, and I was telling somebody about that the other night. I just feel so compelled to focus on doing something loving towards these entities, because love is what heals.
Yes, absolutely.
And let's talk about, you've got so much in this book. I'm really enjoying going down and talking about this, the different laws. Unless there's a law that you would like to bring up, if this is a segueing into something that you would like to follow, which other law, what law would you like to talk about next?
Well, let's go with the law of transition, because that is very near to your subject as well.
Well, I was just going to ask about that, so that's great.
Yeah.
We're aligned on that one. Okay.
Yes. that one I call the take a bow law, because Shakespeare probably said it best when he said, all the world's a stage and each must play a part. And
yes,
as we enter that law of transition, we get to shed the costume of this particular reincarnation and go home again. So it's sort of like you're taking a bow for what you've done, and here you go home again. And as I understand it, when we go over to the other side, we get, first of all, a shower, a light shower, and that basically gets rid of a lot of the residue that we're still carrying from this lifetime. So it that is residue that cannot be in that loving realm. So therefore, it's sloughed away in order to take us to the next level of whatever that will be. And it's different for every person, because a lot of it depends on what the soul expects. And if the soul expects nothing to happen, that they're not into any of this and think that there is no future, then they go, as I understand it again, into a holding pattern, and the soul sleeps, and it sleeps for however long it takes for that soul to feel comfortable upon awakening again. Like, in other words, there's whatever time it takes, somewhere down the line that soul's going to wake up and go, oh, here I am. You know? But
now I want to continue talking about this. This is wonderful, but I it's the top of the hour, so I do want to do a station ID here. You're listening to Toward the Light, leading back to the source. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and we are speaking with Ula Jacobs, and talking about her wonderful book called Hidden Laws. And this is a wonderful topic here, because this is something we've talked about so much, the fact that the people, when they do transition to the other side, what they experience, what they see, is definitely going to be determined to a great deal by that current state of mind, their expectations, and what have you. So please continue. This is wonderful. I really appreciate what you're saying here. You were talking about sometimes if someone expects nothing, that they might experience nothing initially. Go ahead and continue from there, please.
Yes. As I understand it, also with contact I have had from people that have been over and on the other side in between lives, they are in a classroom situation, a school situation where they're learning. And I guess there is somewhere there's a life review, and I don't know the patterns of how this happens or when this happens, but there's a certain life review of the past life that just happened, and then it's decided whether or not the person wants to go back for more learning, or when they want to go back, or how they want to go back, in what kind of a life, what area, man or woman, or what nationality, or, you know, we decide all of that ahead of time in order to allow for the learning that we still want to experience in order to have that soul growth that is what we're all after when we're down here. So
now, have you personally ever had a near-death experience, or is this going by what you've gleaned from other experiences?
Yeah, no, I've never had a near-death experience, but I have been on the other side with people. So that led me into some insight. And also I've had contact with my father, who has passed. He passed about 4 years ago. And he said, I asked him how he was doing, and he said, I'm in school. And that's exactly how he would have said it when he was here. I'm in school. He didn't say, I'm in a classroom, I'm learning, I'm in school. So I do right away with him. Mm-hmm. And it, another person that I worked with previously, a co-worker, had passed over, and I again found myself on the other side, and I walked into a classroom setting with desks and board and everything, and there was the lady sitting about three seats ahead of me, and I said, Janet, what are you doing here? And it should have probably been the other way around. Like, she should have said to me, what are you doing here? And but that occurred to me later. But what she said was, isn't it amazing when you realize that you get to go around again and there is more? And I thought, okay, she's realized she must not have been aware of that when she went over, but she certainly was aware of that at that point. So that was neat. And then she started to say something else, and there was somebody sitting behind me who stopped her from whatever it was that she was going to say next. And then I was out of there. So I suspect that whatever she was about to say, I was not ready to hear at that time because it was cut off. But that was interesting, too.
And it's really nice, you know, how a number of people like yourself can easily just raise your frequency and move into these other dimensions, because it is quite easy to do that, especially once you understand that it is about tuning into a different frequency. And I think in your book you even also refer to tuning the radio. You know, when we tune the radio to one station, well, we're only hearing that one station broadcasting, but there are other broadcasts going on simultaneously. We're just not tuned into those different broadcasts. Well, it is the same thing with this, is that whatever we're tuned into, whatever frequency we're tuned into or vibrating at, that's what we're going to be able to access.
Yeah.
So you're doing some really wonderful work here. And I've made the point a number of times that we are all natural mediums. You know, it's not something that's far removed from us. The other dimensions are right here where we are. They're just different frequencies. It's not far and away up into the sky somewhere. So hopefully more and more people are going to start to understand this. So let's continue on with this, because this is a very important subject. I was really enjoying reading your Law of Transition, and of course, that's the word that I use. I avoid the word death because, as is so rightly pointed out, it's only the body that dies. It's like discarding a piece of clothing, but we do not, in fact, die.